and welcome to our first ever live Trumpet World. Sorry for the delay. Some of our software decided to choose this morning to act up, but we should be coming to you live now on Rumble, on YouTube, and Twitter. I will have the comments in front of me, so feel free to jump in to ask questions. We can use this live show to have a bit of discussion. What we'll do today is we'll go over a bit of the state of play, where we are in the election right now. We have, when we first talked about doing this, there were quite a lot of people telling me, you're not going to have anything to talk about at that time in the morning in the US. We're not even going to know any of our results yet. We've had some saying, well, it could be weeks before we know who won. That is absolutely not true. We've got some pretty clear results. We will talk about that. And then given the time that this is right now in the United States, you'd have to be a pretty committed U.S. politics watcher to be up and about watching this. I think many may have stayed up to see who is winning. And then now that it's pretty clear, they may well have gone to bed. So with, I think those that are joining us, you probably are in the UK or in Europe. And so we'll talk about the global response to Donald Trump's election, the international response. Here to help me do that, I'm joined in the studio by Josue Michels. But first, we have a bit of an opening montage for you to give you a rundown of some of the big news and some of the way that the left has reacted overnight.
Folks, this election is going to be close. Vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz.
It has been a strange and in many ways unprecedented campaign. But now today, American voters will decide whether Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris or Republican former President Donald Trump.
If Kamala Harris wins Pennsylvania, what does it do to her odds of winning the presidency?
Yeah, our partners at 538 say it's about a 50-50 night going in. But if Pennsylvania goes to Kamala Harris, check out what happens to the numbers. Suddenly it shoots up to almost 85% likelihood of her winning.
We are now projecting that Donald J. Trump will win the state of Pennsylvania.
It's the best job market in the history of the United States. Inflation is back to where it was, not only just before COVID, but before Donald Trump left office.
Inflation is back to where it was. The irony of that, of course, is nobody wanted Donald Trump to be president. Nobody wants Donald Trump to be more president more than Bibi Netanyahu.
The Fox News Decision Desk can now officially project that Donald Trump will become the 47th president of the United States.
And Anderson, it is hard to think of a political comeback that is actually more significant than this one. I'm tempted to say Richard Nixon, but that really falls short of what Donald Trump has achieved.
Let's be honest about this, okay? Let's be absolutely blunt about it. There were appeals to racism in this campaign, and there is racial bias in this country, and there is sexism in this country.
Frankly, this was, I believe, the greatest political movement of all time. There's never been anything like this in this country, and maybe beyond. And now it's going to reach a new level of importance because we're going to help our country heal. We're going to help our country heal. We have a country that needs help, and it needs help very badly. We're going to fix our borders. We're going to fix everything about our country. And we made history for a reason tonight, and the reason is going to be just that.
Well, you got the update there, making history. I'm just noticing that our live stream isn't, or our comments aren't working on the YouTube stream, but I believe they are on Rumble. So if you want to get in touch with us, looking up Trumpet World on Rumble is probably the way to go. But first, if we talk a bit about the results. So it looks like an absolutely clean sweep for the Republicans. Donald Trump won the presidency. That, I think, is abundantly clear. It was interesting. I kind of went to bed. It was waking up periodically throughout the night, looking at the different results as I was doing that. And it kind of was like, okay, we don't know much. Then I woke up and it was like, he's very probably won. And then at least what was quite early this morning for me was, yes, he has absolutely He has absolutely won. He looks like he's won the presidency. He's won all seven of the key battleground swing states. Not only that, but it looks like he's on course to win the popular vote for the first time in about 20 years. Not only that, it looks like he is going to have the House as well. So it looks just about a complete sweep all across the board. So really quite dramatic. I want to get some maps and things ready. We'll just talk, we'll show you that. But before we do that, maybe Joshua, you could just tell us a little bit about some of the response from Europe. I know going into the election, in the months leading up to the election, it kind of seemed like everyone in Europe was convinced this was going to be, like, it wasn't going to be close. This was Harris win. It didn't even seem like it occurred to people that Donald Trump might win from the European perspective. And that started to change. You know, there was a few voices over the last two, 3 days kind of saying, guys, it might not go the way you expect. Now it looks like it, well, Now we know. How has Europe responded waking up to that news?
Yes, if you recall, even in the month before, like a year ago, people said he couldn't even become the candidate of the Republicans. And then they kind of woke up in January, well, it looks like he has more support than we thought, and it seemed inexplicable to them. And one of my favorite quotes from yesterday on election day in Germany, Spiegel magazine has been one of the greatest critics of Trump. They featured him dozens and dozens of times on their magazine cover, and yesterday they wrote, after his defeat in 2020, I thought it was the end of Trumpism, because Donald Trump could not possibly make a comeback, and there could be no Trumpism without Trump. And then he explains that it's inexplicable to him that 50% of America would vote for Donald Trump. And then he says at least the 2% of the smart Republicans would turn away from him. Without those 2%, he cannot win. Now, I myself have lived in America, and this is inexplicable to me, so much hatred for just one man. I have lived in the Biden administration years and in the Trump administration years, and if you just look at the gas prices and how much money you have in your bank account, that is a reason for most of people to vote for Donald Trump. But in German news, that doesn't come across. He is a racist and he's all kinds of things. And from his character point of view, you just can't vote for him. I also like a quote from Bild, which is more conservative, but they also are very against Trump. And they said, if you believe experts and politicians on many talk shows, the world will end if Donald Trump wins the US election today against Kamala Harris. Such horror predictions are completely exaggerated. So the world won't end, and we have noticed that already. As the political record of his first term in office has shown, so we had him already for 4 years, and that's what all the Americans know too. The world is not ending because of him. But then the article goes on to say, but there is something that could happen. If Trump loses, his supporters will riot, and that will have global consequences. So even the more conservative-leaning Bild is like, yes, he is a threat to the world for other reasons too. But they also say there could be opportunity for Europe, because that could cause us to unite. We need to do more things independently. And that's actually something many in Europe like. So Trump is actually having that sense too.
Great. Well, I think I do want to get to that European response, some of how that could change Europe in a moment. But while you were giving us that introduction, I pulled up a few graphics from the Decision Desk just to give those of you that are tuning in live a sense for the state of play right now. So, and also, I think, Joshua, I'm not sure if you're wearing your microphone. So if you could you can make sure you've got that. But
seems
we've got
important.
Some of the latest results here. This is... you can see these are the states that at least this Decision Desk has called. There's a couple still in play, I think, Michigan and what is that? Is that Arizona down there that they're perhaps not sure of? But there's I think, let's see if I can scroll down. You can see they're saying, you know, 100%, he's won. There was another graphic, maybe I'll find that later. The Telegraph had a good graphic that was just showing these are the seven swing states that we're kind of watching, and they were all gone for Trump or leaning towards Donald Trump. If we head over and have a look at the Senate race, I think this is another one where it's, look at their projector. They're saying, it's 100%. This is for sure. We don't know the exact result, but the Republicans have at least 51 seats in the Senate. So again, victory there in the Senate for the Republicans. And you can see this the kind of the current state of play across there. The House, I think, is the one where there's the most uncertainty. You can kind of see how their projections up and down through the night. They were like, okay, it's probably going to be Republican. There was a while they were saying it's probably Democrat. It's gone back to probably being Republican. I imagine this is where we'll, looking at and getting some of the updates throughout the day. And you can see the Republicans are ahead, but they're not finished counting in a lot of those key states. I think there's a couple of key points to me watching this tonight. One of these, I think, was this is from Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry's article, America's Supreme Court Has Fulfilled Bible Prophecy. So this is what he wrote back in the summer, and he was talking about a particular passage in the Bible and saying, well, I've come to realize, based on this passage, that God is beginning to silence this man. Barack Obama's power is diminishing before our eyes. And I think that is a big part of what we saw overnight, where I've got a few tweets I'd been saving to show you, but I think this was the one that really stood out to me the most from Barack Obama, where if we put that, we could put that on the screen if I can find my mouse as well. I can zoom in quite a bit for you, make it a bit bigger. Yeah, this is him last night saying, well, don't call these elections soon. We need time. It took several days to count the ballot. It's very likely we won't know the outcome tonight either. I mean, this ended being completely wrong. But there he was playing for time, and it didn't succeed. Did they have a plan to have things change as time went on? I don't know. But certainly they it seems like he was not expecting this kind of a result, where it's just all across the board, and like I said, maybe even the popular vote, and we've got it all already. And I think you look at that tweet and you can see Barack Obama's power is diminishing before our eyes. That is exactly what we have from that tweet. There's one more, I think, key takeaway from the US side of things, but let's talk about Europe with Joshua for a bit, I think, before we get to that. Oh, apparently George tells me he's just popped a message up that our live chat is up on YouTube. I don't know. I did go into the settings and enable it earlier, but I think it might have to be there for the start. Oh, nope. I was just too impatient. It looks like there is a live chat there. So it is still loading for me. If you have a message, I'll go and have a look. I couldn't get our Rumble to load earlier. Our wireless connection is a little bit weak in this room. So when we do this later, I think I'm going to make sure I have a plugged-in connection, so I'm not stuck waiting for a fairly slow Wi-Fi connection to load. But Europe, we were talking about this is shocking to Europe. It really is. And I think this is an opportunity maybe for us to kind of both address and try and explain something to our European viewers and to our American viewers. Because I think there's two very closely related questions of, from Americans, you'll get why do the Europeans hate Donald Trump so much? That this doesn't make sense to me. And then also from Europeans, Donald Trump is so awful. Why do Americans keep voting for him? And I think we can kind of address both of these questions at the same time, where you look at last time Donald Trump was in office, somebody went through and they analyzed the coverage from Germany's public broadcasters, and it was 96% negative. I know you were lining up. I don't know whether George has, if you have them, again, with some of our computers not working quite the way we were expecting this morning, a montage of, or a picture of some of the different Spiegel covers where they've had Donald Trump as Hitler, Donald Trump as a KKK leader, like Donald Trump blowing up the world. If there's any bad guy, they've done that. And I think, you know, I saw a clip of Joy Reid this evening or last night saying Florida is a far right state. You know, here we go. This is the kind of thing you're getting all the time from Spiegel. So you get the same thing. You do get the same thing from CNN. You get the same thing from MSNBC. But I think there's a crucial difference for Americans. Like Joy Reid was on MSNBC last night saying Florida is a far right fascist state. If you're in America, you're like, well, I live in Florida. Or my auntie lives in Florida. I went to Florida on hot, like, it is not a far right fascist state. My own personal experience tells me that that is total nonsense. Because I live here, I know what it's like, I've been there. If you live in Germany and you're getting that 96%, you don't have that. Like, they say Florida is a far right fascist state, and you kind of, like, oh wow, I didn't realize that, and you not, and I think that is a big part of the reason why there's this massive disconnect. And you have relatives in Germany, you travel there even more. Is that the kind of, like, do people really believe this stuff they're getting from the media over there?
The large segments that certainly do. I remember traveling through Germany in the Trump years, and they asked me, like, why don't you kill that guy over there? So it was pretty extreme.
Like, they asked, why don't you kill Donald Trump?
Yes, they asked me, why don't you just go and kill him? So that's, I mean, rhetoric does turn into actions, and that's what we see, because the media is just fuming with hatred. And a lot of the things is the Hitler comparisons. Germany has a history where they had a Hitler, and they're being told that Donald Trump is Hitler. And that he is destroying freedom, he's destroying democracy, and he is friends with dictators around the world, which are Germany's enemies. And then, of course, as you pointed out, that the Americans living in America, like in Florida, they see what Donald Trump does domestically, they see the economic revival, they see that he is not discriminating against blacks, actually blacks and Hispanics are liking him because he's giving them jobs and he's giving them the same freedoms that America has. He does not make a difference. If you work, you get paid the same way. But they're not experiencing those benefits from living in America. So a German doesn't experience that way. And America first does mean that Germany needs to actually do the right thing in a trade relationship. And we can talk more about that later. And that's what they are afraid of. And that's some driving the force of, like, we are going to lose jobs here that Americans can have their jobs back. So they are afraid of economic repercussions there. And another thing is the military. Germany has been relying on America militarily, and they are afraid of Putin, and they're saying, like, okay, Donald Trump is friends with Putin, that means bad things for us. They're basically tech teaming us now, and that's going to be horrible for us. So most of the things they are talking about are totally fantasy. And there are some things where, like, yeah, there could be a little bit of a deal with Putin. Now, Donald Trump has been fairly strong against Putin, too, in some cases, like shutting down Nord Stream 2, which again angers many Germans. But then other Germans say, like, Nord Stream 2 was actually pretty bad. So you have a little bit of two sides. One thing that did change it a little bit was Elon Musk buying Twitter, changing it to X, where the censorship did end it a little bit, which is another reason why so many Germans do hate Trump, because any view that speaks in favor of Trump has been censored by the mainstream media, but also by some of the social media. So that's, censorship is another big reason why there's so much hatred.
So in terms of where Europe goes, like how this affects Europe, that indoctrination, you could almost say, I think will play a big role in this. Like a lot of people in Europe, I'm kind of astonished to hear you say, like, you have your own relatives, like, why didn't you? Like, that's going to inform how Europe responds. There will be people within Germany that will say, that will respond as if America has just elected Adolf Hitler. And I think, I mean, would you say probably people would say, would genuinely say, well, I think he's bad, but not Hitler bad. Like, he's somewhere in the spectrum. He's kind of in that direction. I mean, or do people really believe that he's as bad as Hitler over there?
I have heard some of my relatives say that Elon Musk is Hitler. And they seem to believe it. I mean, there's no indication that there's a mass killing, and that I don't think they're expecting to him to do the same things, but I think they're saying it's the same mindset, even though it's not the same actions. So that might be the difference there.
Okay, so perhaps even more than I realized, they genuinely believe this guy is Hitler. And, I mean, the media has been lying to them. I mean, there was this... You'd remember that, you know, there's this story, this Pulitzer Prize winner. He worked for Spiegel. I think he'd done some work for, was it CNN? And there was this whole scandal where he wrote this big series of articles for Spiegel. And Spiegel, this is Europe's largest news magazine. So this is not a minor publication. And it was this whole series of articles of him traveling around the Midwest in America, and going to these small towns and just writing to the German, like, these are what these small towns are like. And he completely made it all up. And it was completely ridiculous. Like I think one of the ones I remember is he said, was it the movie, like, American Shooter, I think, was the only thing they played at the cinema on repeat. And it was like the worst European stereotypes of Americans. He just wrote it as if it's fact. And that was published in Spiegel. And it's not like lying media is unique to Germany. It's there in the US. The difference is in the US, you have the opportunity to experience the reality. But you know how that is. You get a lie goes out there and okay, the guy, it blows up. He loses some, but there's a lot of people that just never hear about that and the lie sticks and the correction never comes through. So that's informing the response. I've got, if we want to load it up on the, if you want to stick my computer up on the screen again, George, you know, these are some of the, from big European accounts, some of their reactions to some of what's going on over there. You know, everyone's looking up how to build a new, this is, and it's joking, but it's kind of serious. If you believe Donald Trump is Hitler, certainly some of these are smarter people who don't necessarily believe Donald Trump is Hitler, but do believe, perhaps rightly, that they're going to have to take care of themselves and defend themselves more. That's one response from Europe. If you could just take that off and I'll make sure I get another one lined up here. Just one second. I need to have my mouse where. So, yeah, here's another one from a big European account. You know, not necessarily, you know, this isn't someone I follow. This isn't someone who I'm like, yeah, I really respect his opinion. I'm just showing you this is some of what is happening, what people are saying out in Europe. Again, we need to take back control. If you bring it back, I've got one from Emmanuel Macron as well. Well, actually, you know, this is another one. I think this is one I do follow. We can stick that up on the screen. You know, this is one saying, well, European leaders already in the morning, they're saying we need more defense spending. We need Europe to work together more. You know, this is even the UK. This is an MP. He's responding to an MP saying, well, we need to work together more with Germany. We need to do more work there. Again, if we switch it back, I think I've got Macron's next. Yeah, here we go. Let me get that translated before I put that up for you. There we go. I've just spoken with Chancellor Olaf Scholz. We'll work towards a more united, stronger, more sovereign Europe in this new context by cooperating with the United States of America and defending our interests and our values. So immediately this response of Europe, we need to work together. So I think there's a number of different ways we can break this down and look at Europe wanting to work together. I think one of the most striking across all of those different tweets is the military angle, where right, I mean, this is still what we're like 9 o'clock, 9:30 in the morning UK time. You go over to Europe, I guess you're 10 o'clock, but this is still very early on the next morning. We've only known Donald Trump is the next president for a few hours and you're getting European leaders talking about we need to arm ourselves and we need to fight. Have you seen more along those lines in European newspapers and things like that already, or people ahead of the election saying, well, this is what we need to do if Donald Trump is elected?
Yes, and they have been calling up the quotes of Donald Trump saying, hey, I'm not going to protect you guys, you're standing on your own. But it's really interesting what Emmanuel Macron says, because usually a head of state even says congratulations to a dictator. But in this case, they're saying, no, in this case, we have to focus on our own and we have to focus on arming ourselves. We have to focus on building a European army. So we see that throughout the spectrum. We see that in the media. We see that among politicians. We see that in heads of states. And it's a shocking thing to see, because Ukraine right now is obviously in a war, and that alone should cause Europe to wake up. But somehow the reaction to Donald Trump is even stronger than the obvious war on the continent right now. And I have a quote from Mr. Gerald Fleury about that, where he's basically saying those two things combined are driving Europe together. They are driving Europe militarily forward. We have seen that in the first term of Donald Trump, where we have seen more focus on a European army. We have seen Emmanuel Macron saying that we need a European army even against the United States, to defend ourselves even against the United States. But we see that even more compounded now, because they know what's ahead of them, and they're trying to, some of them are trying to use this fear now to get their own ambitions forward.
Yeah, that's a good point, because during the first term, we saw some of this, and there was that really striking quote that you just mentioned from Emmanuel Macron, where he said, we need a European military, not just because we're not sure if America will protect us, but we might even need to use it against America. Which was a shocking quote that really, I think, should have gained more traction even within the United States. So, but I think there was also a tendency in to regard Donald Trump from the European perspective as a problem that we hope will go away. And you look at it from their perspective, he was there from 2016 to 2020, and it was like, okay, we didn't like him, but he's gone now. So we can go back to business as usual. We can go back to our massive social spending and socialized medicine and things like that, and not have to worry about spending money on defense, and kind of back to this cozy comfort zone. And then we don't have to worry. Like, it'll be fine. The problem will go away. I think we'll see an even stronger reaction during a Donald Trump second term, because now it's very clear, I think, to Europe, this is not something that is just going to go away. And even if Donald Trump, okay, there's a two-term limit, from their perspective, they know this is something that has real traction with the US electorate. And even if Donald Trump is gone in 4 years, we'll have another Donald Trump-like figure that's going to be back on the scene. And you know, we need to deal with this. We can't just view Donald Trump as a four-year aberration. So yeah, I think that there'll be that. And I think You've got this situation where the US, after World War II, kind of set up the world where Europe doesn't have a military and America pays for their defense. And really, the fact that Europe wasn't overrun by the Soviet Union, and it's pretty much solely thanks to America. That it was NATO, it was the fact that America took Western Europe under its nuclear umbrella, it's the fact that America had a nuclear first strike policy, it is that America told Russia, you march into West Berlin and we will nuke Moscow, and that America then worked to make that promise more believable by giving nuclear bombs to Germany, to the Netherlands, to Italy, to Turkey. Again, something that is not talked about enough. You know, all of that happened, and that America saved Western Europe from the Soviet Union. And I think it's quite easy to understand from America's point of view and Donald Trump's point of view, where they haven't really received much gratitude, where Europe hasn't, you know, okay, that like they haven't paid the minimum commitment they're meant to meet under NATO. They have used the fact that America paid for their defense to then try and
to build up these massive social systems, but even compete economically. Like, it's easy to understand then why there is a Trump movement, and why there is the foreign policy component, I guess, of the Trump movement is what I'm zeroing in on here, and why it's easy to understand why he himself is even telling Europe, rearm, we want you to stand on your own two feet. We don't want to spend for your defense. But, and this is a massive, massive piece of prophecy, where Herbert W. Armstrong, based on the Bible, based on these scriptures that talk about Europe as a beast power, as a war-making beast power, where the rest of the world looks on and says, well, who is like the beast? Who can make war with him? Like, he talked about this massive military turnover. And I think that's a gigantic prophecy that we have already fulfilled. And I think we've already seen so much of the foundation laid for European military cooperation. And, you know, if you think about building a house, the foundation is critical, but you don't see necessarily big, impressive changes on the landscape as that foundation is being put in. And I think we'll see maybe a lot of those more dramatic, eye-catching changes when it comes to European defense and military now as we move into this next term.
Yeah, so from Trump's perspective, all of this makes sense. He is trying to say, like, why should we take care of a war in Europe? Why should we be protecting Taiwan? Why should we be so involved in the Middle East? Why don't we have an Abrahams Accord where we bring the Arab countries in and they make peace with Israel, and then we can focus on our own economy and all of those things? From Europe's perspective, this is very different. They're saying, now that we have a second term of Donald Trump, we live in a very different world than the first time. We do have a war on our continent. There are military exercises around Taiwan. We do have a war in the Middle East. We do, on top of that, have economic repercussions from the COVID time, from an energy crisis. So they have problems upon problems that have been compounding on them. And yes, now they have to do some dramatic changes. Now, I have seen some of the rhetoric where they say, first of all, we need to cooperate with Donald Trump as far as we can, because they're not quite ready to go it all on their own. So I do expect some kind of cooperation, but behind the scene, they will speedily work toward that military unification, as we have seen in many prophecies you have briefly highlighted already.
And Ukraine is part of that too. I think so much of the commentary around Ukraine is just wrong, flat out wrong. Like, there is this very much in the news, the way that it's been covered this morning. I mean, talking about heads exploding, I did enjoy listening to the BBC Radio 4 driving in here. They had all of their heads exploding. They had a Labour, like, part of Britain's government who called President Trump a racist, what was it? It was like a racist sexual assaulter or something like that, which... I think we're going to run out of time. It'd be interesting to talk about how Donald Trump is going to get on with Britain and Canada's government. And certainly, hopefully, we'll have a similar turnaround. I think there's prophetic indications that we will here in the UK. But this government is certainly not pro-Donald Trump when you look at the Labour government. But one of the things they brought up is Ukraine. And there is this idea that Europe is fully committed to the war with Russia, and Donald Trump is wavering. And I think that's quite a suspect view. I mean, we've talked for a long time, both you and I, about Germany's relationship with Ukraine. They're kind of the way that they promise big and then never deliver, or very much under deliver, the way that they probably have already done a deal with Russia, that their support for Ukraine is kind of cosmetic only, so that they can try and keep their European alliance together, and then even appeal to popular opinion to a certain extent. So you've got that. And I think, yeah, maybe there is some fear with Europe that Donald Trump is going to do something different about Ukraine. And 2 or 3 days ago, he said he was on there saying, I shut down the Nord Stream pipeline, which I thought was kind of hilarious, because, of course, the Nord Stream pipeline was blown up. So I was like, there is Donald Trump. We've been speculating who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. Donald Trump said it was him. I don't think that's really what he was talking about, but he was talking about the way that he put sanctions on Germany and got that cut back. Because, again, it was Germany doing a deal with Russia, and then Donald Trump stepped in and stopped that. I think if you look at Ukraine and why Russia invaded Ukraine, it was after Joe Biden said, well, if it's a little invasion, I think we'd let that go. It's that weakness that invites what Russia is doing. So I think all of this talk that you got all over the BBC about how this is like Russia will be rejoicing, this is a great victory for Putin, I think that's all poppycock. And I think this will be, you know, maybe not. I mean, he has said a few worryingly pro-Putin things over the years, and Mr. Flurry's even pretty directly criticized him for that. So, you know, okay, maybe not. But I don't think it's this slam dunk, definite, yeah, this is a big victory for Russia. And actually, maybe it's a big setback for Russia. You know, it's not a coincidence that Russia invaded Ukraine while Biden was president or in the White House, not while Donald Trump was. But that's another, like, fear of Russia, uncertainty as to whether Donald Trump will confront Russia, the perception, whether it's accurate or not, that Donald Trump will not confront Russia. All of this is leading to Europe pushing its military and building its military. But then the other component that we saw already, just even in that tweet from Emmanuel Macron, where he's saying, well, I'm talking to Olaf Scholz, a push for European unity. I mean, that's something else that we can expect in how Europe responds to this Trump presidency.
Yeah, and essentially is they're saying, and they have been saying that even after World War II, we're seeing major blocs. A major bloc is the United States, it's a superpower, and we see a major Asian bloc that's a superpower, mainly China, on the rise continuously. And we are here in Europe fragmented. A German leader goes to the United States individually trying to bring forth the case of their own country, but he can't represent the European Union as a whole and thus has less leverage. And he, same with China. If you try to have a trade agreement as an individual country, it's harder. If you try to have a deterrence as an military deterrence as an individual country, it is harder. So driving European unity, a bloc of European nations that are united under one government with one person that can actually say something and do it. Right now they have Ursula von der Leyen. She can say something and Germany can vote for it. Less likely because she is German, but France can veto it and there can be so many disagreements. But a big thing that is changing now is they're saying now we have to unite. We don't have an other option anymore. Before we had like minor disagreements about this or that, but if you compare the disagreements we have now with the fear of Donald Trump, and everyone agrees on Donald Trump as being evil dictator, then those disagreements seem minor, and that's really what's driving them together now. And there are many prophecies, and we have for decades, the late Herbert W. Armstrong has said for decades that Europe will be uniting. And one thing he said would drive that unification is that we don't realize how much Europe fears being alone, left out, without the American protection. They still fear Russia. They fear Russia more and more. And they fear losing that protection, and that drives that unification.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point as well. Like, we've seen some of this unification in terms of defense. If Europe wants to defend itself against superpowers like China, or as Emmanuel Macron said, against the United States, they need to be united. But then there's also that trade aspect of it, and that, of course, is a big. That's been a big platform. We've heard a lot from President Trump in the election campaign about tariffs. And you know, that then is something that directly impacts Europe and something that Europe is quite threatened by. I think, again, the EU is very good at getting up on their high horse and portraying themselves as the good guys and the rule of law. And you know, you listen to them and you listen to the BBC here in the UK, probably even CNN in the United States. And it's all, we have this wonderful free trade system, and Donald Trump is going to come in and wreck it all with his tariff system. I think this is a free trade system that Europe is just cleverer about rigging. Like you look at the euro, where Germany shares a currency with all these other European countries. Germany's currency is now much weaker. The euro is much weaker than it would be if Germany just had the Deutschmark. That makes all of these manufactured goods that Germany, who I think until recently were the number two exporter in the world, I think they lost that, I think maybe to Japan. But anyway, that's basically a subsidy. It's a clever, kind of quite roundabout, sneaky way of doing a subsidy, but it's basically a subsidy and it's unfair competition, unfair playing field. And you get what the German government is giving, I think, was it $1 billion to Intel to build a chip factory. So, you know, they are doing things that would violate the what I guess what they would call the norms of free trade and things like that. Biden administration, not going to do anything about that. You know, sit back, whatever, Europe, you do what you want. Donald Trump isn't going to do that. And he has talked a lot about tariffs on Europe, tariffs even on China. And you're right, like Europe, if they're going to compete in that kind of much more hostile world, they need to unite more. And I think it's not about, like, I think Europe, they're a trade bloc. They want to dominate world trade. They want to be setting the rules for world trade. They want to be setting the rules, and they do for a large extent, because everyone else is kind of just goes along with it, on how things are made, safety standards. So much of this is made in Europe. If they want to retain that, they need to unify. And like you look at some of these other trade deals that they've done, like they did this trade deal with Canada, and then the brakes go screeching on this trade deal in Canada because one region in Belgium decided they didn't like one part of this trade deal, and they could, like, until they're happy, nothing can happen. In a world where Donald Trump is standing up robustly for American economic interests, Europe cannot get what they want if they're in that kind of, okay, a region in Belgium, one of the smallest, least significant European states. Apologies to our Belgian listeners. It is a very beautiful state. It is one Britain's gone to war to defend, but you're not geographically quite very, very big. They're not going to be able to compete. Like they need to change. They need to unify to if they're going to achieve their goals in this kind of a world.
Yes, and one point you brought out, like the often like minor things that stand in the way of trade agreements, and I have read that in the relationship with the Latin America. The European Union wants an agreement with Latin America, but you will remember Emmanuel Macron said, as long as you cut down the rainforest or burn it down, we cannot have a trade agreement with you, because that's just morally wrong and we are superior to that. And I have read some commentary that say now, well, in the light of Donald Trump's election, we may have to scale that rhetoric down. We may have to make a trade agreement with Latin America despite those egregious sins that they are committing there as far as the climate is concerned. And another point that you really put out well is that in Germany, you only read that Donald Trump wants to put tariffs on German goods, which is a horrible thing to do because he hates Germans. If you read more closely, it is the fact that Germany has like a $70 billion like surplus in trade relationships. That means that the United States is Germany's main trading partner, competing with China. China might have overtaken it now. But that means they're exporting a lot to the United States. That means that the United States is buying products from Germany. And America is not exporting as much to Germany. That means that Germany is gaining more money because, as you said, they're subsidizing the products. They're helping Airbus, for example, to get an edge over Boeing and things like that.
Not that they seem like they need the help, unfortunately, with what Boeing's doing these days. Yes. But sorry, go on.
It's like a vicious cycle there, too. But even during the Biden administration, we have seen some subsidies when it came to like the green economy, which has been hurting Europe's economy. So Germany tries to export its green goods, green industry, like solar panels and things like that. But if America subsidizes that, you can export less into America. So the German economy has been hurting there already. And now it says maybe Trump keeps those subsidies and puts tariffs on German goods, which means that German goods will become even more expensive. So Germany will have to bring those goods somewhere else. And they're saying Latin America is the most likely destination for those goods, which is an amazing thing in a way, because another prophecy of the late Herbert W. Armstrong was that Latin America and Europe will be uniting in trade relations. And they will not be uniting because of they agree with climate change or things like that, but because they have the common roots, they have a common history, they have common languages. So we are seeing that happen in a dramatic way, which is pretty amazing to see.
And we've also talked about Europe and China coming together in a trade relationship, and I think you could certainly see that under President Trump.
And they see the hypocrisy too, like Donald Trump is Hitler, but Xi Jinping is a saint compared to him. So, but I see it a lot where they say, like, yes, we need to overcome our moral compass, or say, like, okay, China, we can't deal with them because they have moral problems. No, we have to deal with China. No, we have to have trade relationships with China, no matter that they are threatening Taiwan, no matter that they suppress minorities. So that's a very hypocritical thing to do there.
So in terms of how Europe responds, I think, you know, trade and economics, we're going to see Europe unify. We're going to see Europe develop a strong military. Are they going to start looking for their own European Trump? I think that's something we talked about during the previous Trump presidency. Is that something you've seen talk about in the run-up to this election? We need our own Trump.
Well, it's very interesting. Just today, the German government is coming together and talking about their coalition breaking apart because they don't have enough public support anymore. They're declining in popularity. The media is pressuring them. So I don't see it as much in the news that much, but the people definitely desire a stronger leader because of the many crises and because of the economic problems that are facing them. A European Trump, probably not, because Trump is so much hated, but the comparison of a strong leader just as Trump, we can see that. And also an interesting situation there is the leader that we are watching is rising in popularity right now because he has lived for more than 10 years in the United States, and he is a so-called expert on the United States. That's the former German defense minister, Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg. And he has lived in America for long. Now he's on talk shows, now he's on interviews, now he has his own podcast, and everyone is asking his opinion on how evil Donald Trump is. So you see that people are looking for someone with answers there.
That's a really good point, that he is, you know, we've been watching him long before Donald Trump had anything to do with presidential ambitions. And it has been fascinating to see, and really remarkable to see him emerge as one of the foremost German critics of Donald Trump, at least in the English language. Like, I'm just there's no shortage of Europeans and German newspapers and things like that that will attack Donald Trump. We talked about that earlier. But in terms of, like, German leaders, at least that will go on Fox or Fox Business or CNN and talk about how evil Donald Trump is, I've seen Zu Guttenberg do it. I don't know if I can think of anyone else. I mean, maybe there has been, and we are paying more attention to Zu Guttenberg than we are to some of these other guys. So, you know, to be fair, perhaps there are others going around in English criticizing it. But he, you know, he's viewed as an expert because of that time that he had in the United States, and that he's a former, you know, an ex-politician, you know, used to serve very high up in the German government, ex-German defense minister. So people look at it, well, he knows what he's talking about, both from a political background and from a United States background. And so, yeah, he's a leading German Donald Trump critic, this strong man that we've been, or this individual that Mr. Flurry has highlighted as, who has a very strong possibility of fulfilling this strongman role. And he's leading the charge against Donald Trump in many ways.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he is a so-called transatlantic, where he is, his whole life, his political career is on basis on making a cooperation, a partnership with the United States. Germany needs to be strongly united with the United States, where you have other political parties like the left, and they are very much against America. They're saying, like, America is a capitalist nation that exploits the whole world. That's why we have poverty in the world. So you can see there are lots of hatred on that left-hand side. But he is the one that's actually supposed to ensure that America has favor in Germany, so that the criticism comes from him is even stronger because of that reason. He said Joe Biden was the last transatlantic politician in America. We will never have such a great politician anymore in America because that generation is over. The people that served on military bases in Germany that were here and spent some time, that generation is dying with Joe Biden. He's the last one that really had that personal connection to Germany. And he actually was in Germany just in October, where he said that Germany is America's most important ally. Sorry, Britain, I guess. So here he is really promoting that. But this relationship will end with Donald Trump. That's how Gutenberg sees it. But he also has used much more strong language against Donald Trump, calling him like a madman in the White House. He's comparing him to a child that can't control his emotions. So from a perspective of personal insults, I think Gutenberg is definitely leading there.
So I think we'll move towards wrapping up. Is there any other points that you think are worth considering from the European perspective and what we're expecting from this second Donald Trump term and what we're seeing out of the United States?
I think the important thing to watch is that Europe is uniting, but also that they are probably going to keep some relations with America, because I've seen that a lot where they say like they have infused some of the political parties have gone to Republican conventions and talked to people there to form relations with the people under Donald Trump to make sure that we still have some relationships there. But overall, I think there is a strong break. I don't know if you can compare it to when Winston Churchill was elected in World War II, where Germany had to say like, okay, that means a total strategy change right now. Now we have to attack Britain militarily. And in the end, if nothing changes as far as repentance goes, that's where it will be leading. So I think it could be compared to how traumatic that change was.
Well, thank you for that. I was just having a quick look to see if there's any breaking news we can bring you towards the end of this update. And it doesn't seem like too much has changed here. We've got, I did see the Telegraph and some of their live coverage. They have is there still a route to Harris victory? And apparently there is. If she wins, everything that hasn't counted yet, basically. So
miracles happen, right?
Yeah, so she would have to win Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Alaska, Maine, New Hampshire, and Nevada. Then she can still clinch it, which even if it's just not Alaska, I think then Donald Trump still gets there. Or maybe that might be a tie, actually, if he gets Alaska and she gets everything. Anyway, not going to happen. It seems like it's done. It's over. That there's all of those swing states. Okay, there's a few that haven't finished counting, but they're all leaning towards Donald Trump. And it's that victory. And so I think there's one final thought and final scripture. My Bible's down here that I would like to leave you with. And I think this applies to Donald Trump. It applies to what we were talking about even with Zu Gutenberg in Daniel chapter 4. And I think this is in many ways the big lesson of this election. This is what I should have prepared that clip. But this is what Trumpet executive editor Stephen Flurry was talking about yesterday on the Trumpet Daily Show. Daniel chapter 4 and verse 17, where here God gives a prophecy to Nebuchadnezzar, to this Gentile king. And he gives it through Daniel. And Daniel says, well, this matter is by decree of the watchers and the demand of the words of the Holy One, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will and sets up over it the basest of men. That's the big lesson here. The Most High rules in the kingdom of men. I mean, we sent out as our trumpet brief last night, Mr. Gerald Flurry's article that went out January 2021, why I still believe Donald Trump is coming back. And we had that big prediction in 2019, in the autumn of 2019, where we said Donald Trump is going to remain America's president. And we said Donald Trump is going to come back based on Bible prophecy. And okay, we didn't fully understand those prophecies, but we saw so clearly that the Bible said Donald Trump isn't finished, that there were these prophecies regarding his time in office. They were not over by 2020. So we said we're going to get another 4 years. Now, there was a 4-year interval where he was out of the White House that we didn't know about. But that forecast now stands fulfilled. Donald Trump is heading back to the White House. I think We'll be back on at 1:30 GMT. That's what, 7:30 Central Standard Time. We'll have Andrew Miller, we'll have Philip Nice on as guests, and we'll talk more from a US point of view there. And I think what happens over the next 3 months is definitely going to be part of the discussion there. What do you expect, both prophetically, but just from looking at the news? You know, how do the Democrats respond to this? It may not be plain sailing. When you see how they're going to respond and what's happening, I think Barack Obama's power is being diminished before your eyes, like we talked about at the start. You see that already, but he'll disrupt things as much as he can, and there's a spiritual dimension, a spiritual war even behind this that we talk about. That Satan, the devil, is not going to give up easily. But God is more powerful, and Satan's response is going to be as strong as God lets it be. We don't know exactly how strong he will let that be. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, this is we're heading now into a Donald Trump presidency, exactly as we forecast. Not because we're expert political pollers. I should have brought some of the clips of people getting it confidently wrong. I've seen plenty of those today, and it's not because we're better at reading the polls or we've got a better finger on the pulse of events in America, but it's because of Bible prophecy. And we quite clearly saw, and God revealed, that these prophecies in the Bible that show Donald Trump would be coming back. And so Mr. Flurry made that forecast in 2019. Like I said, we got the four-year interval with Joe Biden wrong. And then 2021, he said, well, I still believe Donald Trump is coming back. We sent that same email out to all of our email subscribers on the Trumpet Brief last night, reminding them, he made this prediction, and now Donald Trump is on the way back. And the message of that is, again, that God rules in the kingdom of men. And as the book of Daniel even means, the name Daniel means, God is my judge. God decides the outcome of these different events, whether it's world events, whether it's events that happen in your own life. That if you are part of God's called out ones and you are dedicating your life to God, well, God is your judge and he decides the outcome of those events. So really let this election point you to God. I mean, that's that God is the one that is going to save America. This is, I should have brought this up as a soundbite, but I think this was from Donald Trump's victory speech this morning. He said, many people have told me that God spared my life for a reason. And that reason was to save our country and to restore America to greatness. And now we're going to fulfill that mission together. I will bring every ounce of energy and spirit to the job that you've entrusted to me. And he's right that God spared his life for a reason. That reason, though, is so that this warning message can go out one last time. That is, that's why, but God is behind world events, and let this event magnify God in your eyes and bring God into your life more and bring the Bible to life and get you digging into the Bible more. I mean, that's the biggest takeaway from what we've seen in the US election. And so we're going to see some pretty epic events happen in Europe that we've been forecasting for decades, that Herbert W. Armstrong wrote about in great detail because the Bible writes about them in great detail thousands of years ago. We're going to see all of that happen. So thank you so much for joining us. It has been a really exciting first with a live stream. It's just it's been wonderful to spend this time with you. We will be back, like I said, at 1:30 GMT, 7:30 Central Standard Time. We're going to have probably a more traditional election response there when our US audience will be awake. Our US commentators are awake. We'll talk about it more from an American perspective. But thank you so much for joining me, Joshua. I think so many of the dramatic prophecies around a Donald Trump presidency do revolve around Europe. And I think I am glad that we were able to hit this so strongly. I mean, it's not day one of the Trump presidency, but day one of that news. I think this is an important angle. I'm really glad we're able to hit that hard. So thanks so much for joining me. I think we'll get, I don't think we had Twitter chat figured out. We'll get that figured out next time. And again, if you have questions, if you have comments, you can leave it in the chat. Drop us an email, trumpetworld@trumpet.com. And we can, if you say you're watching this in the replay even, and you want something for me to ask our panel or to discuss, Send that over to me, and I can try and put that on the agenda, and we can talk about it. We can bring you into the conversation. We're very happy to try new things with this live format. Let us know what you think. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'll see you again in a few hours.